Hey, good morning, Vineyard Church. It's great to be with you here on this cold Sunday morning. I just had to turn my phone off because I got a freeze warning. Isn't that great? How often do you get a freeze warning in New Orleans? But anyways, listen, I have a dog. And for all you dog people out there, I hope you can relate to what I'm talking about here a little bit this morning. My dog's name is Sapphire, and she's a miniaturized version of an Australian Shepherd. And she just turned 14 a couple weeks ago. And, you know, my pup's getting a little old. She sleeps more than she used to, probably a little hard of hearing. We're not sure about her vision, if she sees as well as she once did. And she now is having a hard time crossing tile hard floors. She just kind of slips and slides and gets real anxious about it. And she kind of has to curve along the side of the wall so she can move where she's going across that tile floor. Carpet, she's fine. She does well. And the latest thing is she doesn't like to be alone. This is a new thing for her. You could be sleeping in the middle of the night and suddenly you'll start hearing this little bark, this little whine, and then it builds to a bark, and next thing you know, you got to go out and calm the dog down or let her know you're still there and maybe have to lay on the couch until she goes back to sleep or something like that. But I don't know. She's still somewhat the same way she used to be as when she was a puppy. She loves food. She loves coffee. She'll bark at you when you sneeze. She'll bark at the blender. She'll bark at the hair dryer still. So she still has some of that puppy stuff in her. But she's still not quite the same as she was when she was younger, when she was a puppy. Now, when she was a puppy, we discovered what it means when a dog is classified as a herding breed. I thought I'd done my research, and I knew that Aussies were herding breeds, but, well, she's bred to herd animals. Sheep, in particular, for example, the first time we let Sapphire loose in the backyard with an 8-year-old Samuel, who happens to be my son, what does an 8-year-old boy look like to a herding dog, especially when he starts running across the yard? Well, he looks like sheep. And what do herding dogs do when they see sheep? They start chasing him. And when they start chasing him and they catch him, what do? They start nipping at their heels, thinking that Samuel's ankle was a hoof. And so she does. She bites at his heels. Our neighbors at the time were the Johnsons, and I think she took a little nip out of poor Jonas behind on one occasion. Needless to say, Sapphire almost didn't make it to one, let alone 14, because Mama wasn't too happy about the nipping part. But she kind of grew out of that. But she was a good sheepdog, looking for some sheep to herd, to chase from behind, to nip at their heels, to make them go where she wants to go, happy as she could be just being herself. And today we are continuing on our series on the different images of Jesus, looking at the image of Jesus as not a herding dog, but the image of Jesus as the Good Shepherd. And there's a few questions to consider as we look at the image of Jesus as the Good Shepherd. For example, when Jesus describes himself as the Good Shepherd in John 10, what does he mean? What does the image of Jesus as a shepherd conjure up in our imaginations? And what does that image mean for us today? Well, as I studied this, I learned that there are two basic types of sheep herding or shepherding. There's the Western method and the Eastern method. And the Western method is what I experience and what we experience with my dog. That's usually the sheep dogs barking and nipping at the sheep's hooves. They herd from behind. They chase the sheep from behind. That's very much the Western method of sheep herding. Whereas the Eastern method, which is apparently still in use today, is where the sheep are led by the shepherd. The sheep follow his voice. And I've seen pictures of that. So it's an important distinction as we look at the image of Jesus as a shepherd that we remember that there are two kinds of shepherding. So as we get started, let me read from our passage in John 10. Starting at verse 1. Very truly I tell you, anyone who does not enter by the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used his figure speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and just leaves the sheep and runs away, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because the hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father." Well, we all know that Jesus was a carpenter, not a shepherd. But in John 10, he uses the example of a shepherd to produce an image of something that the people of the day could relate to and understand. And we often use images to help us convey an idea or thought in a way that is relatable to the audience at hand. For example, don't crawfish have a shepherd? Don't we use shepherds to grow and nurture and develop and chase our crawfish? Probably not. I know it's a bad example, but you get the idea. And when Jesus used the term shepherd in reference to himself, the listeners at that time knew what a shepherd was and what they did. In Jesus' day, shepherds and flocks of sheep were a common daily image, an everyday feature of Jewish life. The shepherd was the authorized caretaker of the flock, and the job required dedication, courage, and vigilance. And it's interesting that while the Old Testament drew upon the role of shepherd in describing both God and Messiah, shepherds during Jesus' day didn't garner much esteem on the Middle Eastern social ladder. They were regarded as vulgar and lower class, but they served a key function, and everybody knew what the role of a shepherd was and how he played that role in their culture. Additionally, the idea of Israel as sheep and God as their shepherd was also a well-known concept. Ezekiel 34 speaks to God as the true shepherd of Israel, a passage that Jesus would have known and makes use of here in his encounter with the Pharisee when he describes himself as the good shepherd. Ezekiel 34:15 says, "I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I will make them lie down, says the Lord God." In Psalm 74:1, God's people are called the sheep of his pasture. And one example of a prototypical shepherd referenced to in Ezekiel 34 was David, the great king of Israel, who started as a shepherd of his father's flock. He was a man after God's own heart, but he was seriously flawed, committing great sins during his reign as the king of Israel. He wouldn't have been considered the good shepherd. So the Pharisees listening to Jesus' words clearly had the image of God as shepherd and Israel as a sheep solidly impressed in their minds. And speaking of the Pharisees, what's their beef? Aren't they always around when Jesus is trying to do something good? Jesus had just healed a blind man and kind of setting the story up here on the Sabbath, no doubt, and that was a big no-no under the law as interpreted by the Pharisees. So they were investigating. The Pharisees were investigating who would make mud and heal a sinner on the Sabbath. And if this Jesus was from God, he would know that making mud and healing on the Sabbath was against the law. Therefore, he couldn't be from God. At least that's what the Pharisees were thinking. They think, we got him. Well, the man who was once blind but now can see simply says, well, no one has ever made someone blind from birth see, so Jesus must be from God. So in their great wisdom and depth of understandings, the Pharisee drove the blind man out. They didn't like what they heard. And the story says that Jesus found the blind man, and the blind man confirms who he believed Jesus to be, and Jesus essentially tells the Pharisees that they remain in sin because they claim to be able to see, but in reality they can only see what they want to see, and what they don't see is God standing before them in the person of Jesus. So Jesus goes on and tells them about a gate, a magical voice, some sheep, thieves, and bandits, a wolf, and a good shepherd. Sounds like something from a Hans Christian Andersen or Brothers Grimm fairy tale. But he tells the Jews, and this is a story about Israel, at least initially. He tells the Jews about a sheepfold and about those who enter by the gate, the shepherd and the sheep. And those who get in by another way, he calls them thieves and bandits. And he tells his audience that the shepherd calls his sheep by name and leads them out. And when all the sheep are out of the sheepfold, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice, that magical voice that beckons them to follow. They're not driven. They follow the shepherd because they know his voice. This is the Eastern way, remember? There's no need for sheepdogs to chase and nip at the sheep's hooves, which is the Western way. Jesus says that they won't follow a stranger because they don't know the voice of strangers. They know his magical voice. A little confused? The Pharisees were, and everyone listening was a little confused. What is Jesus talking about? And then Jesus explains, and he uses the same imagery. He says that he is the gate for the sheep, and that all the claim before him were thieves and bandits. But his sheep did not listen to them, those thieves and bandits. He says that he is the gate by which one must be saved, and that he who enters and comes in and goes out will find pasture and comfort and rest. The thieves and bandits have only one goal in mind, to steal and kill and destroy. Okay, that's three things, but you get the point. But Jesus is just the opposite. He says, and I quote, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." So let's make sure now we're all on the same page before we move forward. The images that we have thus far are a gate. Jesus says that he is the gate whereby the sheep must enter to be saved. Jesus is the gate. We enter through him. The sheep are the Jews, the people of Israel. The thieves and bandits are the Jewish leaders, primarily the religious leaders, who are leading the people away from a true understanding of who God really is. They can't see that Jesus is God, the Messiah. So as we move back to our story, Jesus says that he's not only the shepherd, but he's the good shepherd. He says the hired hand, he's just that, a hired hand. He's not the shepherd. He has no vested interest in the sheep other than a paycheck. And when danger comes like a wolf, the hired hand just runs away. He runs off. The wolf comes, danger, and he's gone. He runs away, but not the shepherd, not Jesus. He stays. He doesn't run away. He faces the wolf and protects his sheep. I recently finished a book by Isabel Wilkerson called The Warmth of Other Suns. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. And it tells the story of the great migration of African Americans from the South during the Jim Crow era from 1917 to 1970. And as she tells her story, she picks out three real persons and kind of weaves them throughout her telling of this great migration. And one of the characters she talks about, her, who's a real person, is a doctor, and his name is Robert Joseph Pershing Foster. And he grew up in Monroe, Louisiana, right here in North Louisiana. And he went from there, and I think he got his doctorate in Nashville or something like that. But he wanted to make a better life for himself, so he moved from Monroe to Los Angeles in 1953. And he was an excellent surgeon who gave everything he had to his patients. And years after his death from cancer, a patient of his recalled how after a surgery that he had performed on her, she awoke one morning. She awoke a morning after the surgery to find Dr. Foster sitting in a chair beside her bed. And very surprised to see him there because it was early. The breakfast trays hadn't even been served yet. And she wakes up and she sees him sitting in the chair. Then she says, "Well, what are you doing here so early?" And Dr. Foster, he goes on to tell her that she had a hypertensive crisis. In other words, her blood pressure had risen very dangerously high. And this occurred after the surgery, and that neither the hospital nor he was able to bring it under control. And she was very close to having a stroke. And he came in and was there for her. And she asked, "Well, what did you do?" And he said, "Well, I got to the point I couldn't do anything but pray." And he stayed by her hospital bed all night. He sat upright in a chair in her street clothes. He fought back sleep, watching over his patient and praying for her to live. By morning, the patient's blood pressure had returned to a safe range, and Dr. Foster checked in with the nursing staff, gave some orders, straightened himself out. He was a very neat dresser, and started his day making rounds on the rest of his patients. And Dr. Foster, he reminded me of Jesus in the story, who, like a shepherd, didn't run away, but stayed and fought the wolf here, the wolf being hypertension, and he protected his sheep with the only weapon he had left. And that was prayer. And with Jesus, he goes even farther. Because for Jesus, he, in fact, will give his life for his sheep. He will give his life willingly of his own free will. No one even tries to force him to give up his life. He does it on his own. He willingly will die for all of them. Because if you think this is just about the Jews, think again. Because Jesus said that he has other sheep that don't belong to this fold, originally the Jews. And he says of this other fold, he says, "I must bring them also," he says. And said, "They will listen to my voice. They will hear that magical voice. And there will be one flock, one shepherd." And he's talking about the Gentiles, or the pagans, or the Greeks, if you read your Bible. What he's really talking about is us. He's talking about you and me. And he says that he knows his sheep, and his sheep know him in the same way that he and his Father know each other. All of them, all of us, he knows all of us. So why again would I follow this Jesus who lived 2,000 plus some years ago? Because he's good. And why is he good? Because he knows us. He knows me. He knows you. Why is he good? Because he will protect us, even if it requires him to lay down his life for us, which he did. Why is he good? Because he wants you and me to live. Really live a full life, an abundant life. And we're not talking about material gain. We're talking about a full, rich life of relationship. Why is he good? I mean, others have given up their lives for others, which is noble and heroic. But only Jesus was good enough that his life would cover the sin of the world. And only Jesus was good enough not to stay dead, but to raise again from the dead with the power to bring humanity with him. He was good enough to defeat death once and for all time. As I researched this topic, I saw all kinds of pictures of flocks, of sheep, with the shepherd at the head of the flock, and the sheep following. There were just hundreds of sheep following behind the shepherd. I guess that's as it's done in the Eastern model of shepherding. And in those pictures, I didn't see sheepdogs like my little Sapphire chasing after the sheep, you know, driving the sheep ahead of themselves, nipping at their heels, the more Western style of shepherding. I saw a video of a shepherd caring for his sheep, feeding them, watering, administering medicine, nurturing his flock. I saw another video of different people trying to call sheep that were grazing in a pasture. I don't know what language they were speaking, but they all used the same phrase or call to try to get the sheep to respond to their voice. There was a little boy, ha-ta, 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 and there was a woman, ha-ta, ha-ta, ha-ta. There was a man, ha-ta, ha-ta. Sheep, they just kept their heads down, and they kept grazing, they kept eating. But suddenly, the farmer or the shepherd, he came up to the fence. And he started calling the sheep with the same phrase or call, ha-ta, 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 a few times, constantly, gently, and one by one. It's crazy. The sheep popped up their heads upon hearing the shepherd's voice. I watched it. They were eating, and boom, comes the head. Boom, ha-ta, ha-ta. The heads popped up. And with the familiar voice of their shepherd calling them, beckoning them, they came running to where the fence was and where their shepherd patiently waited. There are many voices in the world competing for our attention. There's social voices, there's religious voices, there's cultural voices, there's political voices. We've just come through a hard political season with different voices beckoning us. But there's only one voice that is truly good. And remember when I spoke of a magical voice? That magical voice that Jesus used to call the sheep? Well, I believe the secret to that magic is relationship. The relationship that Jesus says he has with his Father. They knew each other. They know each other. The relationship that Jesus has with his sheep, with his flock, with us. We know each other. From relationship comes forth the magical voice that can be heard above the din of the competing voices. The magical voice of the Good Shepherd. Have you heard his call? Can you hear his voice? He's calling everyone because he loves everyone, because he is good. As we wrap up here, I would just ask you folks at home, just take a moment. Just where you're sitting, where you're seated in your jams, or from the TV, your phone, your iPad, your computer, just take just a brief moment. Close your eyes if you would, and imagine standing before a gate. Can you see that gate? Can you imagine that gate? Just try to visualize it and listen for the voice of Jesus, the Good Shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Amen. Thanks for joining us today. Go in peace.